Είστε παρέα με το SBS Ελληνικά. Βρείτε περισσότερες ενδιαφέρουσες ιστορίες στο sbs.com.au/greek.
The day before I found out that she was murdered, and I say murdered because she was murdered, she didn't die. I was at my mother's place and we had dinner, and my youngest daughter had a friend over for a sleepover. And so we went to Yaya, as they all call her, and we were all there. And then I was scrolling through my phone after dinner, where the kids were just having, you know, as they call Yaya's glika. And the topic came up, another body found in the park in Parkville of a young girl, and they didn't know. And I remember saying to my mum, oh my God, another girl is dead. What's going on? And I thought, what's happening to our world? But I didn't really think about Courtney. But a few weeks before, I had a very bad dream that Courtney had died, the first time ever. So I remember it was a very dark place, a coffin. I was trying to get to the coffin. There were people. I was trying to push through the people. And I was startled. The day before I asked my mother, I had this dream. They say the people who are born on a Saturday, what they say it becomes true. And I said, stop being like that, you know, this old ideas. So we went home after Yaya's, didn't think about it. And the girls were sleeping together in my bed, right? They were only little. And I slept on the couch. I fell asleep, as you do as you get older, on the couch. And then early in the morning, the police came. Turned around and I saw these plainclothes police. And I just was shocked. And I remember backing into where the TV console and all that is and said to them, the girl in the park, it's Courtney, isn't it? And they just said to me, let's come and sit down. And they kind of, what they do, they set me right in the corner of the couch. They grab two chairs so you're like in a real tight space. And they said, yes, unfortunately, we have bad news. And I said to them, are you sure? And I said, how do you know? And they said, her fingerprints. And I remember as the conversation went on, I said, did she die quickly? And they said, we don't know. And then I remember there was information coming and I was trying not to scream because I had two little girls in the house and I was trying to hold it together. And I was going between, did she die? How did she die? And they said, she was beaten to death. And I said, was it bad? And they were just saying, yes, very bad. And then I went to, well, this is the drug dealers, or was it this person? Or was it, you know, I started naming names because my life beforehand had been trying to chase Courtney when she was unwell and get her into a hospital. Not all parents can do this. It's a full-time job, and I had times when I went, bye, I can't keep doing it. But ultimately, in the back of my head, I knew I needed a break, and then I would do the search again, talking to dealers, talking to her friends, following her on Facebook, doing when I could get close to her messenger, getting into her messenger, and tracking her. And so the process began, and they asked me, you know, the last numbers that I knew, and I gave them all the details. And my mother was going to Akivia for one of my best friend's parents, and that Sunday. And I thought, oh my God, I've got to go and tell my mother. And my cousin was going to take her because I had the girls. And I got the girls in the car, and I packed the little girl's stuff so that she didn't have to be shocked. And I rang my cousin. I said, see ya. I said to her, look, I've got some bad news and you need to know. And the first phone call, I said to her, Courtney is dead. And she said, what? And the shock, I said, you need to keep it together because your mother's there and I don't want her to have it. She's elderly. And I said, you need to go to my mum's and don't pick her up. Do not take her. I'm going there now. I said, just tell her you're running a bit late so I could get there. We were in the car and I remember these two little thinking because I was crying and I was like shaking, and I said to them, you know, I don't know how to say this, but Courtney's died. And they were just, you know, because they're young, they're going, how, what, where? I said, I'm not sure, but we have to go to Yaya and so forth. And I got to my mum's and she answered the door, and I said, she goes, do you forget that they're law, bri bri? And she goes, they're on a bell. And I said, just come inside, Mum. And I walked her into where the kitchen living area was. And I said, Katze, she wouldn't sit down. And I said to her, Ikosadina Bethane. And my mother started screaming. And she sort of staggered back and fell on the couch. And she said, Diles. I said, Diskotosane. I didn't know what did she. The next thing I remember is that the whole house, the phone was going off. My cousin called my sister who came over. You know, people start ringing. They took my phone away, you know, because I couldn't handle that. It was just too much. And at the same time, the only phone call that I was taking was from the police. You know, can you send us photos of Courtney? Can you do this?
And you weren't allowed to go and recognize the body in the morgue.
Now, there was no way you could recognize the body because of the damage he'd done to her. So I'll get to that. But I said to them, how do you know it's Courtney? And the only way they were able to identify her is by fingerprints because she was in the system. Otherwise, there was no way you could recognize her. So Henry Hammond decimated her. He spent 50 minutes bashing her one after the other. And every time he hit her, it wasn't a slow, you know, bang, bang. He picked up a stick. And he kept bashing her until her brain was out, her eyeballs, every part of her body was smashed. I know it sounds gruesome. I think there was no way that I was not going to see my daughter. The autopsy people and all of them were like, no, you can't see her. And I said, can I come and hold her hand? He even smashed her hands and they tried to put all her body back together, you know. And I said, you don't know me. I'm a fierce Greek mother. You know, I've been protecting my child. So when we'd organized the Christo from Victoria Funerals, who's a family friend, and I said to him, Chris, I will be coming to see the body. I don't care how it is. And I said to him, no one else will come because I knew it was bad. So my sister and my brother, in due course, when the body went to Victoria Funerals, drove me there. I went in and Chris was there and she was in her coffin. And by that stage, we'd got her address and my cousin bought her the beautiful Stefani that sat on her. My sister had given her a bracelet that they'd got from a monastery, you know, which she was holding. And her hair was completely shaved and her whole body was cross-stitched together except for the head because I couldn't attach the skin to anything. I think most people would not do that and could not do that because I had done a neuropsychology unit when I did my psychology degree at Melbourne Uni. I had dissected a body, a head, okay, with a brain and the whole lot. So for me, seeing her, you know, seeing the brain and seeing everything else, the skull smashed and everything, it was not a sickening feeling. It was more a clinical. But what I saw and what I said to them was sheer terror. He said in the trial that he wanted to destroy her. He went beyond that. It was very bad. When they found her body, grown officers and police were vomiting because it was so gruesome. And the head of the for a homicide, they said generally he stands very stoic and he was really emotional. He kept saying she suffered a horrendous death and that the system let her down. Now, the system it wasn't just the mental health system. We then found out that it was also the correction system that let her down because he was out on a corrections order for 6 to 7 weeks before he killed Courtney. And he had tried to kill his previous partner. He wasn't charged with attempted murder. The police had come to modify the charges to causing bodily harm, threatening to kill and so forth. And he had tried to strangle her and tried to dislodge her eyeball, and she managed to get away from him, thankfully, because she gouged his eyes. He did not go to jail. He was on remand for that entire time. And then when his sentence came up, he went before a parole board, and I know I'm jumping a bit here, but the parole board was worried about him being released because he has a history of never complying, never taking treatment. There's nothing wrong with me. His mother and father came down and made assurances by saying, hey, my son, this is the first time ever he's wanting to be part of the mental health system. She met and she invited him to go and smoke ice. Courtney had organized to smoke ice with this girl. Daniel, her then partner, said that he tried to keep her away from it, but it was like she was intent on not feeling, not dealing with anything. But ice was her thing. And this girl was like, come and party with me, Courtney. And that's all she needed. And he couldn't keep her in the house. So they're on the tram going to this girl's place at the time. And Daniel and his cousin felt uneased about Henry and took a photo of him, which obviously helped the police to track him down in due course.
Fate somehow, bad fate, brought them together.
Well, that's...
Courtney was kind enough to look up.
Give him a thing, and then she took him to the house, to this girl's house. They had smoked a bit of cannabis, and they both, the other people said they didn't smoke ice, but Courtney and Henry smoked some ice. They then left the house at about 8:30, this place where the girl was staying. Courtney said, let's go and have something to eat. They went to the veggie bar in Fitzroy and they both had a meal. The CCTV shows them both engaging in normal banter. There was nothing untoward to draw attention. They ate for about an hour, and when it came time to paying, he had no money, so she paid for his meal. They then went back
for her murderer's meal.
That's why I say, you know, she would never think, you know, that she's thinking kindness. That's okay. You don't have any money. I'll buy you a cup of soup. I'll buy you a meal. I'll give you a cigarette. And a lot of people came to Courtney's defense about that, saying, you know, it doesn't matter. She's a human being. It doesn't matter what she was. So what happened then was that it was a gathering. So a gathering of people who were smoking and taking ice. At about 3:30 they left, and she's obviously offered him to go and stay where she was staying with Daniel. They were heading that way, and he said that the voices in his head became louder, that she was a demon that needed to be destroyed, that he saw the sign of the twigs and the branches that were falling down as a sign from a higher spirit that he had to destroy her. He said he had to destroy her because in a past life she had buried his wife alive. He had destroyed his family. It was all about him and his family, you know. It was almost like projecting that she did all this to my family, really.
In a past life.
I mean, yeah, exactly. Not taking accountability for his own life. I think it's a good excuse to say, she ruined my life. She did all this. And only he could make it right. I think his schizoaffective disorder, put on drugs. So just like Courtney would have her illusions, but he'd get violent, you know. With the last girlfriend, when he tried to kill her, he said he wanted her voice out of his head. And he was saying things like, he actually said, I want to kill you. I have to kill you. Those are auditory. So I think when he's in that state of psychosis, murder is going to happen. And it's always violence against women. He doesn't attack men. It's always women, which really is discussed. Another violation of women's safety in society. And because he's been charged not guilty, well, found not guilty by reason of mental impairment, he will come out in due course because he knows how to play the system. Henry will engage in all the treatments at Thomas Embling. He could have a 20-year sentence. It doesn't mean that he just spends 20 years. If he's doing well, he could be out 3, 4, 5 years in the community. In the meantime, to transition him in Victoria, because he can't leave the state of Victoria because of what he's done, they will ring me and notify the family when he's out. They could say, Daxia, he's out in X, or he's being supervised for an hour in the park. So, and then, you know, it gets longer, and they'll find a job and a home. And because of that, right, he could be living next door to anybody. Do I believe that Henry will then stay clean and not have and take medications and abide by the rules? Absolutely not. I strongly believe that he will come out and he will murder another woman. He will pick up from where he left off with Courtney, of 50 minutes of him bashing into her, destroying every part of her, bar her feet, so that and grunting like a heavy, evil grunt every time he hit her, because the homeless man heard that. But what was happening was that when he says that, as he decided that it's time to kill her, he picked up a big branch, and Courtney turned around because she was walking ahead. And according to Henry Hammond, Courtney looked scared, and her last words were, "Are you going to kill me?" And with that, they smashed her over the head, and she screamed. She kept screaming with every blow until there was nothing, no more screaming. But he kept smashing into her for 50 minutes. So when they said she suffered a horrendous death, it was horrendous. It was there was nothing there. As I said, I held my child. I saw what he did. I have photos with my child in her cask. I remember Chris Victoria funerals, I just took the photos, and he said to me, I don't know how you do this. And I said to him, she's my child. There was no way I was not going to kiss her goodbye and see her. And her body was still seeping blood, and I could taste her blood. And I remember the days after, I didn't want to eat anything. The photos I have of Courtney are not publishable. I took one of the Stefani that my cousin bought for her to see. You can't see anything else but her dress and Stefani. My sister, her holding the bracelet, really in itself is, again, because she's her hands and what had happened. She'd obviously tried to protect herself at some stage, and I remember I could recognize her because I could see her beautiful lashes on this eye, on her right eye, and I was seeing those parts, and I really thought that he had used weapons because of the indentations of, like, there was one hole that went all the way through to the other side. That is him bashing and hitting for 50 minutes, nearly an hour, until the stick had splintered into different shapes and caused those indentations.
14 months after her murder, the judge found Henry Hammond not guilty.
Correct.
Due to schizophrenia.
What he said, Henry then, he said, after he'd bashed her, he tied her feet together with two pieces of stick and a piece of black cloth and dragged her 20 metres, I think it was, to where she was. He covered her face, head with a concrete block, her body with leaves and dirt, because he said she was too ugly to be seen. He meant that her spirit, but what was there. And he then sat down and had a cigarette. That's how he was. And then afterwards, he waited till the 7:30 tram started, got the tram into the city. But before he left, and this is why I have issues about him being schizophrenic, he managed, they said he relapsed into schizophrenia. They said that regardless of whether he'd taken the drugs or not, he would have killed Courtney. I don't believe that, because he was in the society for 7 weeks and he hadn't killed anybody. The drugs were the catalyst. That's why I always believe that his schizoaffective disorder and the drugs just pushed him into that demonic mindset. Is that an excuse? No. And here's the thing. The judge found that the two reports of the two psychiatrists, right, who I now have found out work in the same organization, which is just, you don't do that. You go and get independent, you know. But even when I was listening to it in the court, like the one of them said, I've read the other's report. The prosecution said, I've read the defense's report and I agree. I'm thinking, why are you reading his report? It's supposed to be independent. And the defense is a lot more, their report was a bit more not so sure, but they said, look, it's definitely not schizophrenic. And Henry, the defense said, no, categorically schizophrenic would have happened, didn't whatever. And my argument is, in those 6 to 7 weeks, why had no one picked him up? Because he would have been having delusions or anything like that. How is it he relapsed into schizophrenia and decided to kill Courtney at that moment? And then he's back out of schizophrenia and has the presence of mind to steal, not a lot of things, but what he needed, the phone and her wallet, which had hers and Daniel's cards. How was it he went back to the city and presented as normal? He must have just got rid of his jacket because there would have been, you know, organs and stuff stuck to him. His jeans were saturated in blood, but they would have just looked like dirt. And the first thing he said to the police was, when they asked him if he knew Courtney, he denied it. So he had a presence of mind. And I go back to what the policeman said, it isn't what it seems. So he made full admissions, but he was still a bit, you know, all over the place. But he certainly knew what he even now, I've asked, he still maintains the same, so he knows what he's done.
Do you believe that justice was delivered, though?
No, because they say that he's been schizophrenic since 2017, right? And I said to them, how is it? Now, he's been in and out of mental hospitals, the northern where Courtney was once, hospital was once there, and not one doctor has diagnosed him with some sort of schizophrenic delusions, yes, you know, all of the other things. But no one has actually said, this guy is schizophrenic. No report until these two gurus post-death both said, oh, we think it's schizophrenia. One of the things that the psychiatrist said was, well, you know, we give him the, you know, after 3 weeks, they should be responding to medication. And he was still very unwell and we stopped the medication. I went, 3 weeks? I'm thinking, what universe are you living in? You know, Courtney would be in, for example, maybe 2 months in the acute ward trying to get her equilibrium back in her brain. Not this 3 weeks. That's euphoria. That's a textbook thing. Even Henry, I know for a fact that he wouldn't respond in 3 weeks after long-term use. And that's because of what happens to your brain when you take ice in particular. You kill nerve centers that never go back. It's like black holes. And they will never, ever, ever heal up. And I said to the DPP, I said, if you can show me a scan, you release him in due course that shows that his brain has healed, I've got fair, you know, I'll take my hat off and I'll go, okay, with medication and treatment, keeping an eye on him, he might have a chance. But it's not going to happen. And because of his history, 27 years of never, ever engaging in treatment, he will not change. So he knows, and the best example of that is when he tried to kill his last girlfriend. He sat in remand. He went to court. No medication involved, okay? His parents came and he said, look, give me a chance. I've now, you know, realised how bad it is. Not in remand. He's never been in jail. And, you know, his parents came. They said, you know, we think he should have an opportunity. They advocated for him because they said never has Henry wanted to have it happen himself. So the judge was very worried and agreed to release him. But they just didn't release him like that. They put him on a community corrections order, what we call a CCO. Even during COVID times, people who are on bail don't have to report. But if you're on a parole or if you're on a CCO, you have to report. Who was called Henry's caseworker? If you could find out, that'd be great. He wasn't even given a CCO to report to. And so he was let on the streets. He didn't engage in any of the treatments, nothing. Now, my I issue with the parents. They have a huge debt to explain to the people of Victoria and to their son and to my child's murder. They went back to Sydney and they did nothing. I know it's very hard for parents of children who have mental health and addiction together to be involved. You know, you can't do it all the time. But to come down to advocate for your son, to convince the judge to let him out, and he goes, well, okay, we'll give him a go, and then go back to Sydney and not to pick up the phone call once to ring up the police and say, how's he doing? Is he reporting? Or the parole board, is he doing this? Had they done that, Henry Hammond would have been picked up and taken back to jail, not be allowed to eventually kill Courtney or another woman, because he would have done that. And that's my grievance with his family, who have to deal day in, day out with children who have disabilities, mental health issues, and or drugs, or a combination of those. No one knows what that's like. But to come in, open the door, and say, you know, we're going to support him, why didn't you follow it right through to the end? That's my grievance. The other thing about the psychiatric system, the order was that he was found not guilty by mental impairment. Now, the law says that. You can't hide behind mental impairment post hoc. And that's just it. How is it? I kept saying to them, I don't believe that two people could come to the diagnosis of schizophrenia and an entire mental health system since 2017 had never been able to. Is our mental health system so broken that it took two gurus to find him, you know, mentally unwell, that he's got schizophrenia? And even then, who cares if he has a diagnosis? He knew not to take ice. He knew not that he had to take a depot injection or antipsychotics.
He's at this stage, what do you expect? Is there anything else you can do?
Look, he will go to a psychiatric hospital. I wanted him to be jailed for 20 years, or whatever that sentence is, medicated, and to take account of his choices in life and be accountable for what he's done, right? Not to go to a psychiatric hospital. It's important that Courtney's story and his history and the failure of the entire mental health system and then the correction system and now for us family, the justice system, gives him the opportunity for him to sit at Thomas Embling, be medicated, comply, and be given the opportunity to come back out in whatever time frame, and it will be quick because he knows how to do it, and be part of society. I asked the legal team if his history in terms of his violence against women would be released and be present in society. And they said to me, well, under the Mental Health Act, he has the right to that not happening. So we need to scream from the rafters that this person is dangerous and he will be out again. But it's excuses. And what I'd like is for us as a state and as a country to readdress the issue of mental health. Stop focusing and throwing money at the ambulances at the bottom of the cliff. We need to start opening psychiatric hospitals and offering effective treatment at the top of the cliff. That means barriers. Open the psychiatric hospitals. You know, we're in a COVID situation now and they're throwing billions of dollars because of mental health. Often that's not enough. People need to go into a hospital, not to be locked up, but to get the treatment they need in a time frame. Where Henry will be going used to be the old Fairfield Psychiatric Hospital. Not enough beds.
So you believe that once he comes out, there is a serious chance he might relapse or even kill again?
I believe he will. Not if, I believe he will. There is no way that he can be monitored 24/7 in due course. You know what I'm saying? The only way to do that is if they put him on a criminal corrections order, which means that he has to report every day. You know, if he can do that, Great. Historically, for 27, 28 years, even now, Henry doesn't believe he's sick. He doesn't want medication. He plays the game, as he always has. I use the word engaged. He doesn't engage. When he knows that when he's closed in, whether it be in the jail or in a psychiatric hospital, we saw him in the court. You would not believe that was the same Henry who had you see on TV disheveled. He was in a suit, clean cut, looking like a choir boy. We all came out of that court hearing. I remember the police, the lawyers, the media, and we went, who is this person? He looked like a choir boy. But we know also now that even while he's been incarcerated, while he's waiting his trial, he doesn't want to take the medication. If he's given a chance, he stops taking it and he hears voices or he goes, whatever happens, right? So why is he given the opportunity to come out? And if they suppress his history, move next door to even you or your another family, and do what he always does. Slowly, slowly do the talk and go back using narcotics, not engaging in treatment because, remember, there's nothing wrong with me. I'm not sick. I have no illness. And he stops taking and he goes underground.
Your daughter
got
a life sentence because her life got cut very short. How would you remember Costadina Courtney? And how would you like others to remember her?
She was so kind. She was so loving. She was so free of judgment of people of all walks of life. The life sentence you talk about now is mine and our family and her friends. Because every time Henry comes out from Thomas Embling, whether it be a day leave supervised or eventually he's free to have an hour out by himself, the phone will ring from the DPP, OPP to say, Metaxia, just letting you know, hey, Maxie, that Henry will be out in this, maybe they tell him what area. So, you know, I think about the trauma that would bring to for myself and my family and her friends, because what I said to them is it's not just me, my children, her father. It's a conglomerate. We are a WOG family in the true sense of the word. And I love that because there's so many of us. And there's friends who've come into that circle. And can you imagine having to say he's out today for an hour? So we have got the life sentence, not Henry. And if they suppress, which they want to do, his history, he's given a clean slate. Courtney was sentenced by him because she was kind and caring and she trusted a violent man who didn't present as violent and was given the opportunity yet again to restart his life. For me, he had that chance many times in and out of the psychiatric treatment. He knew no medication when he came out, no treatment. This is what happens. Right? He knew when he tried to kill his girlfriend back then, you know, caused bodily harm and made threats, that he came out. That was his last chance as far as I'm concerned. And it resulted in Courtney's murder. He should not be given another opportunity to come out and kill again. I don't know why the system is so broken that he can keep coming out and out and out. I know the DPP in discussions when we went through what was going to happen in the brief of evidence on the Thursday before Monday's trial. The solicitor reassured me that this time he will be supervised. And you know what? To some extent, that gives me comfort, but because he will come out and he will relapse and they'll pick him up. But that means he'll just keep going in and out of the system, you know, until he actually murders somebody and then he'll be put in jail. And that's how it's going to be. And I don't want any family, anyone to go through and to see the horror and experience the horrors of what we are experiencing and going through. No one.
It's a parent's nightmare. But I'm sure that you raised Courtney from when she was born.
Yeah.
Having dreams about her.
Yeah.
Wanting the best for her life.
Courtney still had opportunity. It was taken away from her. You know, even after what happened at the hospital and the flow-on effect of that led to her death, it was just, I don't want to say her fate, cause that's rubbish. No one deserves to be murdered, you know. But, I should tell you one of the funny things. She had a great sense of humor. She played the piano. She wasn't very coordinated in sport. And we used to laugh about that because she'd be, you know, falling over. She was kind beyond kind. She loved her papu and her yaya. Loved them. When my mother saw her for the last time, it was Baska, and she was with the Austin. And Courtney was very, she goes, yaya, I spoke to papu. And she's thinking, oh, yeah. No, he loves me, yaya. She goes, oh, no, yaya, he forgives me. He knows everything, and he loves me, and he forgives me, and he's close to me, like, right? One of the last sightings of Courtney was at Papu's gravesite, who she's buried with. And the lady who's further along saw this young girl sitting cross-legged, smoking and talking to the grave. And she went up to her and said, are you all right? She goes, oh, no, it's okay. I'm talking to my papu. And as she was leaving, she said, see you, papu, I'll see you soon. And the lady said to her, let me give you a lift. She goes, no, I'm going to catch the train back into the city. Did she know she was going to die? I don't know. I know that she's safe now. She's up there chain smoking and having a wuzzle of whiskey with my dad, protected by people that she loves. She won't suffer. But did I think she was taken too soon? Absolutely. But she was smart, and her own worst enemy was herself. And I'm saddened that we didn't and don't have a system to access mental health services as they should be.
Θέλετε να ακούσετε περισσότερες ιστορίες σαν και αυτήν? Ακούστε στο Apple Podcast, στο Google Podcast, στο Spotify ή οπουδήποτε ακούτε podcast.